to the pod. Has it been a minute? Why are you looking in my pockets? Worry about you, friend.
Take your stupid comments and put them in your pocket.
That's right. Welcome back to Cash Grab Cinema. I like that Josh did not understand that reference at all, but Trey got it.
Went straight to the room.
Welcome back to Cash Grab Cinema. I'm Josh, joined always by Trey.
I'm Rachel.
And Josh.
I guess that makes me Trey.
Welcome, everyone.
Hi.
So this week, month, whenever... Again, stop looking. God, get what you get.
It's the season. It's all. This is the podcasting season.
Oh, I thought you were talking about my seasonal depression. It is. It is hitting extra spicy this year. It has rained so much. But we watched Grey Gardens.
Grey Gardens. Now, this was your idea to watch Grey Gardens. Why did you want us to watch
Grey Gardens? I don't want to watch Grey Gardens. I don't want anyone... to watch Grey Gardens, and I hate to give away my answer to is it a cash grab so quick and fast, but you know what, these two are holding on and everybody loves the opinion of men, so keep listening so you can find theirs. But I think for me, Grey Gardens baffles me. People love it.
Yeah.
Yes.
It has a Criterion Collection
it's
release.
It's got it. Mm-hmm.
It's in the Library of Congress. It's been listed as the top 100 influential movies, not just documentaries.
Yep.
And people love, and my question is, why? Maybe, Josh, you could take the offense on this.
Sure.
Because you are one of those people.
Yeah, yeah. I remember I came across this film when I was studying documentary ethics, of all things. And we watched Grey Gardens, and it's weird because I think... by the time we had watched this, we had sort of become a little desensitized to the idea of, like, seeing people.
Who's we?
We, the documentary film students. Mm, okay. That you know, we had watched enough and done enough, so there's this sort of disconnect between people as people and people as subjects, you know? People as, like, basically things that can be exploited for attention.
Listen, I hate to go so hard so early in the pod, but you mean the 8 overprivileged students who did grad school with you?
Well,
shucker.
But it's an interesting film. It's done by the Maisels brothers. The Maisels brothers did Salesman, which I loved a lot. I thought that was a great documentary.
Who did they exploit in Salesman? Did they follow around poor people and go, oh, you would do sales, nerd?
They followed around... people on the verge of poverty who were trying to scam genuinely poor people.
You know, like I just guessed and I was right.
As Bible salesman.
This was like the original Florida Project.
yeah. Sort of. Yeah.
So Trey, is this your first viewing of Grey Gardens?
Yes.
Okay, as one coming in, fresh eyes. Tell us about the movie. What give us like a quick 5-minute synopses for people who have managed to dodge the most influential documentary of all time.
The movie is about a mother and daughter who have a very codependent relationship.
I would agree with that.
Yeah.
They have been living together for several decades. Were wealthy at some point, but did not quite learn how to manage not being wealthy. And because of their proximity to their previous wealth and also their proximity to Jacqueline Kennedy Onassis rose to prominence again, it is a sight. I had seen it referenced before. Mm. I had not seen the film myself, and I can say this as a millennial watching this movie in real time. I did not look at my phone once.
Yeah, it captures your attention.
Oh my gosh,
for
that's
sure.
So funny. I was scrolling the whole time. Like, I can't wait for this garbage to be done.
I think it really pained you to watch it. in a lot of ways.
There are parts that it makes me... Okay, I know that we're only like 8 minutes in, but I'm being 100% serious when I ask this question of the two men on the pod.
Yes.
Do men not... Do men even like women? I often wonder, do men even like women? Straight men get... Do any... Is... Because when you watch this and the Maisel brothers, you just think, they hate those women.
Really?
That's the... They hate them. And they don't give... They don't care what this does to them. They don't care the outcome of the movie. They don't care the outcome of these women's lives. They don't care how it affects them in any way, currently or in the future. They didn't put any thought into it whatsoever. And it makes you question, do men hate women? Do you even like us?
I'm going to let the straight person answer first.
Well, I will say yes. But in this situation, obviously, it's, you know, it's pretty clear that we have a situation where two filmmakers were basically like, I think they had gotten called to work on some other project.
So there's this woman. I can't recall her name at the moment. She knew the Maisel sisters, and she wanted to make a documentary. Oh, hey, it's 10 o'clock. It's time to go get ready for bed. I'm sorry to cut this short.
Shortest episode ever.
Ow, ow. So she wanted to make a movie about her life and the homes in her neighborhood.
Right.
And so she knew the Maisel brothers, and she was like, hey, I want to make this movie. I have a lot of money. I'll pay for it. And they're like, great, we're coming. She wanted Big Edie to narrate the movie.
Oh.
Because she does have a good voice. And yes, she was a very talented artist at one point.
She's known for her vocal styling. Yeah. She's yeah.
Like,
she's
got the pipes. At a point in the movie, they play some old albums that she sings on, and you can hear, like, they're beautiful. There was talent.
Yeah. In her 70s or in her... No, she's in her early 80s, I think, when they're filming.
So the Maisel brothers show up, and she takes them to the Edie's house. And she's like, hey, what... Do you want to work on this movie? And essentially, they were just like, well, look at these fucking freaks. Let's make a movie about them. Mm-hmm. And from that small interaction, Jackie Onassis and another relative of theirs got together with $30,000 and made repairs to the home. And then when they come back, still with that woman's money to make a movie about the Edie sisters, or excuse me, mother and daughter.
The Beale ladies.
Yeah. That's after $30,000 worth of repairs have been made.
Repairs including restoring the running water.
Yes.
Because they were without that for a while.
Mm-hmm. And heat. They didn't have heat.
I don't even know where to start.
Yeah.
Honestly.
Like, it makes you want... Okay, if these people had no connection to Jackie Onassis...
Yes.
And this was an episode of fucking Cops, would it be something that you're just like, oh, that's so amazing? Or would it be just the most ethically unsound thing you've ever seen?
That's the thing. I think without the Jackie O connection
and their attachment to wealth,
they wouldn't care. Yeah, because it's more like, oh, look at these people. They were aristocrats. They used to be rich, but now they're living in squalor. Let's look at them.
They have cats and a raccoon and.
But really, it's a
lots of cats and lots of raccoons.
It's a situation where these
was it?
Yeah.
Oh.
But like,
well,
going back to your point, like going back to your point to the systemic ways that really this is just two ladies who are sort of left alone and not given any sort of like resources or support to actually provide a lifestyle. You know what I mean?
So my main problem with this film is lack of content, like context. There is no context. This movie, I don't know why they want to clap so hard for themselves, because a lot of people credit this film with the birth of reality TV.
Mm-hmm.
Good job, I guess.
Honey Boo Boo thanks you.
We have Puck from the Real World because of Edie Bouvier.
Honestly, the way that this plays out and the the tension between like subject and creator and being paid for documenting your life. Mm. It, this is the precursor for My 600 Pound Life.
Yeah.
Right.
Because they were paid.
But it's cashing in on the grotesque, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like it's making, it's so deliberately it's shot it's and shown in a way that, well. Yeah.
It's just so unkind.
It's meant to highlight how grotesque it's supposed to seem.
And the brothers are just like, oh, well, we were just flies on the wall. This is who these women were. We didn't act. There's no narration. And there's not. There's no narration. There's no fucking explanation. It just allows you to run wild with your thoughts. And in a society that sees women as stupid, it's easy to be like, oh, well, this is their fault. Is it? Big Edie was born in the 1890s. What rights do you think she had? Women could not get a bank account until sometime in the late 60s or early 1970s.
Right. Like, so very, very recently in history.
Yeah. So when the men in their lives decided to stop caring for them, how do you expect them to care for themselves?
Right.
This idea like, oh, we'll go get a job. How?
Mm-hmm. So
who's hiring?
So real quick.
Who's hiring two women with no skills who literally had people waiting on them? Yep. They used to have a full staff there.
Yeah. Yes, a full staff.
Until Big Edie's husband was like, oh, well, we're getting a divorce. I'm going to give you the equivalence of about $4,000 in today's money, which might sound like a lot of money until you realize they live in a literal mansion.
Yeah. Huh.
And no alimony. So.
Right.
And he just did that. She had no representation. She had no way to defend herself. He just could, and the court and the world let him. Let him abandon his own daughter to live this life that she, if you watch this movie, she's so unhappy.
Oof. Oh, Little Edie?
Yes.
Yeah.
She's painfully unhappy. And then the times she is joyful and she shares that with these fucking douche nozzles, the dancing scene makes me cry.
Yeah.
Because that's all she ever wanted. Like, she used to be quite a good dancer. Like, she could have, they both could have had very artistic careers if they had been born men.
Uh-huh.
But that dancing part is painfully sad to watch. It's the only time in the film she seems truly happy. And you can't hear it, but you can just feel it. They're just laughing at her.
Yeah.
But do you, I go back and forth on whether or not she knows that. Because sometimes I don't think she does, and sometimes I don't think she thinks she cares.
I don't think she does know.
Okay.
Because after the dance was over, she's still so happy.
She is. She's elated. She's like on a rush, on a high.
Yeah. And she thanks them and says, like, where have you been all my life? Yeah. I think she thought that this movie was going to be life-changing in a positive way.
Yeah.
But it wasn't. It wasn't.
Not directly.
I mean, her mom died not long after this.
It was one year after the movie came, after the movie premiered, Big Edie died.
I think the answering machine, like the phone messages they play.
Yeah.
If you had any doubts about how, what are the director's names again?
It's David and Al Maisels.
Maisel.
They're the
Maisels.
Yeah. Albert and David. If you had any doubt how they felt about Big Edie and Little Edie, it's when they play that fucking message. Those women are a joke to them, that they got to ride all the way to fame. Because they had a bit of fame, but now they have accolades and they're legends and their Criterion Collection. They still teach this fucking crap and Josh was in a master's degree program. And they were talking about, like, oh, is this movie ethical? And these fucking people are just like, well, let's hem and haw over it and laugh at these women more. Like, the fact that they did not come to the conclusion, the fact that this movie wasn't showed as an example of what not to do.
Yeah.
Tells you everything you need to know about people who are making documentaries today.
You try to give people the benefit of the doubt. And then
they show themselves in the film before their subjects are even shown, letting you know that we're the stars.
Well, yeah. Well, by then they probably already had, you know, celebrity, at least in New York. You know,
well, people know them. And also the newspaper clips that say, like, relatives of Jacqueline Kennedy living in squalor.
Just to remind you over and over again that they deserve to be laughed at because of their closeness to Jackie Onassis. Like, what? They're not Jackie Onassis.
Remember her? Her husband got shot in the head about a decade ago. Anyway, her family's not doing too well.
I gotta say, I have a lot of complicated feelings about this movie. Off top, I will say I am glad that I watched it.
I'm glad to have watched it without paying for it.
Also as well.
But you can.
Allegedly.
You can pay for it on HBO Max, or you can go to other sites and not pay for it.
Don't do that. Don't do that.
Unless HBO wants to sponsor us, then go watch Great Gardens on HBO Max.
As soon as it comes to Tubi. Tubi?
Do you think...
Tubi. I will bear my breast to you.
To be or not to be? To be, of course, because to be's great. That's my little ad read.
We'll try again.
Do you think Tubi will record one of those, like they'll film one of those, like Nicole Kidman walking through the movie theater, but it'll just be me walking to my couch?
Why are you walking? The couch is already there, bro.
The movies are back. Within your own home. The popcorn that you've made yourself.
The popcorn costs $7 for 90 tons.
You'll literally never run out.
You can put all the butter you want on it. No one is here to judge you.
The movers are back, but did they ever leave you?
They were always here.
Do you have to
and on your TV screen.
Do you have to take a shit? You can pause.
And go take a boo-boo.
And you won't miss a thing.
No one will be there to shush you. Do what you like.
It's on Tubi.
You can scroll your phone and watch the movie, and no one will be bothered.
Oh, God.
So I gotta say, I have so many complicated feelings about this movie.
Yeah.
Primarily because these were two... Like, they weren't just rich. They were, like, old money rich.
Yeah, they're America's Camelot.
Yeah, and their descent from that status to where they were just really scraping and surviving together.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, I don't celebrate that. Like, I thought maybe I would feel differently about it, but I was like, this is really sad because they have no skills to take care of themselves.
Yeah. And when would they have cultivated those skills?
Exactly.
Right. I mean, that's why you eat the rich. It's over quickly. You know what I mean? If you starve them out or whatever, that's just not as satisfying.
All right. Josh said it. Who are you saving when it comes time to eat the rich?
Saving room for?
Ooh. No. Dolly Parton. No, I'm going to save Dolly Parton.
Oh, saving. Okay.
Does she even count?
Right?
Because
it seems like she's desperate to get rid of her money.
Yes. At every turn.
All right. So we're saving Dolly. Yes. Josh, who are you saving?
A billionaire? Or just anybody rich?
Anybody rich.
The surviving founder of Ben & Jerry's.
Ooh, that's a good one. That's a good one.
Very good.
The future world needs ice cream.
I'm saving Janelle Monáe.
Great choice.
These are good choices.
Yeah.
Our future of three rich people, well, they won't be rich anymore.
No.
They're going to take their money. But these three former rich people who will take care of, because they don't know how to take care of themselves.
That's right.
It's going to be nice.
You want to survive, don't you?
Well, Josh made it gross.
The hell? Why do you always go to Deliverance? Every fucking time.
I bet you would be filming the Edies. Leave them alone.
Speaking of, when Big Edie sings along to the record,
the
only record of her own song,
mm-hmm.
and she ends it with like a minor note.
Yeah.
And she doesn't mean to.
Yeah.
That is haunting to me. Because you would do that in a horror movie to signal that something is wrong. But she did it because that's what she hears now. I was like, this is hauntingly tragic.
Yeah.
I don't like this.
Yeah.
The reception to the films bothers me almost as much as the movie.
Go on.
The amount of, when it first came out, the amount of men who were just like, nobody wants to see this. They're not dressed enough. Big Edie's fat. She's sunbathing. She's old. It's gross. Just like, people are fat.
Yeah.
People get old. And fat.
If they're lucky.
And fat old people sunbathe. What? Get over yourself. This worship.
They have private property.
This worship of youth culture is terrible for all of us. Old people, not old people, young people. If I hear one more person talking about like, oh, Miley Cyrus looks so good for 30. She just looks like a 30-year-old. What
are
do
people
men
saying that?
What do men think happen when women turn 30? Like, it's not a raisin overnight. We just look 30. Often people tell me like, oh, Rachel, you look so young. No, I look 30 because this is what a 30-year-old looks like.
That's correct.
Like, calm down. But then it's all the, for me, the what's worse is the armchair psychologist.
Let's get into it.
This is a quick 5-minute Google search of the different mental illnesses that the internet has diagnosed them with.
Okay.
And they just get crazier.
Oh, internet.
So
I'm disappointed in you, internet.
So one of them, the only one that I think like, oh, maybe that could be true, is Little Edie wears head coverings all the time.
Yes.
Yeah.
And she has no eyebrows.
Because she has alopecia.
So I read that one. And I was just like, okay, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Here's the crazy ones.
Okay.
Hoarding disorder. Tichotillomania, where she rips out her hair. Oh. Anxiety depressive disorder. Schizophrenia. Asperger syndrome, which is not a real thing. It's just autism. Toxoplasmosis.
From the cats.
Black mold poisoning.
I mean, if we're going that far, then we need to go, like, what did the lead and the pipes do to them?
Right.
If we're going to, like, go that far.
It's amazing that people can watch this snippet that has been carefully crafted by directors, filmmakers, and editors to think they know everything about two women with literally no explanation in the movie to understand why they ended up where they ended up. If this movie was made by a woman director and a woman editor, I think it would be the movie you actually wanted Grey Gardens to be.
Completely different.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because Grey Gardens is a great message, but not about these women, but about how society treats women and how they're just, once they're done using you, you are discarded, no matter your station. If it can happen
That's
to
the
them,
fascinating part.
It can
Yes.
happen to anyone.
Damn.
Because they're not just like, oh, they're kind of rich. They're like the fucking, the Biltmore estate rich.
Yeah. They got money, okay? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But was the story that, what was it? Mr. Beale lost some money in the Great Depression.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess when it came time to, or when it came time for him to die, when he died, he didn't have as much to leave,
still,
or it has something to do maybe with the brothers.
He was still alive when they were first entered this kind of, they've been living like that for over 20 years.
That's right.
He was still alive.
And they were on, but it
was busy with his new wife.
Yeah. He was busy with his new wife, but she was living on.
He did not like Little Edie because she was her own person. Yeah. Often he would, he told her like, do what you're supposed to, which for her was to get married and have babies.
Because he wasn't trying to finance her lifestyle anymore. He was like, I'm going to shove you off to a man so that I don't have to pay for you anymore.
Right.
That was his whole MO when it came to her.
Yeah. And she wanted to be on Broadway.
Yeah.
And she had opportunities, but she could not see them through because she didn't have enough money. Mm-hmm. Why someone whose parents or dad is super rich, doesn't have enough money because your dad hates you.
Yeah. Totally. I don't. He didn't see her as a person. He saw her as a burden.
Yes.
Yeah.
And okay, so full disclosure, after I watched the documentary, I also watched the HBO produced movie.
That was circa 2009.
Yeah.
So they were both dead by the time that movie came out.
What, the summer or whatever?
No, it's called Grey Gardens. Also, the one with Drew Barrymore and Jessica Lange.
Yes.
Oh, and then there is another. Well, but it's.
It's kind of like the B sides of Grey Gardens. It's the Beals of Grey Gardens. That's also on HBO Max.
Yeah. So and that, it's long too, isn't it? Like 3 hours or something.
So of that is actually the footage from the first time the brothers met.
Oh, the sister, so or, it's yeah. before they.
Yeah. So that's okay. And it has the lady in it that wanted the documentary made about her.
Mm, okay.
The, she's got. Brown, straight hair. She's kind of attractive for her age.
And the Maisels just said, out of the way, lady. Look at these freaks on the hill.
Pretty much. Yeah. But that is like an uncut. Well, I mean, it's cut, obviously, because documentaries.
Yeah.
You make a lot of footage to get down to even a 30-minute documentary. Oh, yeah.
The ratio is a lot higher.
It's for wild. Documentary. Because you got to find a story within all this footage.
Actually, that's a really amazing point, because when I watched this, I watched the documentary twice. The first time
always
I watched it,
the librarian.
I was like, this is completely enthralling. I was on a roller coaster of emotions, but what I kind of didn't catch the thread of is like, what story is this telling? Because I thought Little Edie was fascinating.
Yeah.
Everything about her, the way that they kind of told the story of why she ended up in this position, it kind of filled in some details, but not all of them.
If you watch Greg, if you're going to watch Grey Gardens, you should read about their lives and then watch Grey Gardens, because that's the movie it should have been. But look at Trey falling into another stereotype of a gay man, loving Little Edie. Gay men love Little Edie.
Oh, she's an icon, right? I mean, she's
there are people who do drag as Little Edie.
Yes.
Hell yeah.
That's how I first learned about Grey Gardens was, it was from RuPaul's Drag Race, and the drag queen's name was Jinx Monsoon, who did an impression of Little Edie. I was like, who's this? And none of the other people on the show knew who that was either.
Huh.
And it sort of reintroduced her to a new generation of people. The problem is,
she's like a cult classic.
Yeah, but as Rachel kind of hit on, there is a way that gay men in particular can consume
women.
Cis women in a way that is dehumanizing and not really...
Absolutely.
Fully appreciative of their humanity, and I think that Lil Edie falls into that with 100%.
Yes,
that's really a shame, because she's I don't know. Yeah,
I feel like
she's got a great personality,
and I'm not saying that this is true of all drag queens and gay men who like Lil Edie, but it seems like they're in the same vein as the Maisel brothers, who see her outfits and laugh.
But. All the people that I know that I've after I watched this, I made other people watch it, and they were like, does she have a sweater tied around her head with a brooch? That's gorgeous. I was like, it is. It's survival fashion, but there's something to it that's kind of like scrappy that speaks to people who do drag, who have to pull together what they have to make something new that's like this. She's genius. She's on another level. And I do honestly believe, like, fashion wise, she was ahead of her time.
I agree.
That does not preclude the other very real things that were going on with her.
Her fur jacket look.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
The khaki dress.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I I stared and I was like, wait, so where is it tied? This is amazing. Yeah.
But even from the beginning, that first part where she's talking about, oh, you know, for the day, I mean, the best thing to do is just have some tights and, you know, just put this around here. And of course, you could just take this off and it's a cape. And like everything she's saying has been really well thought through. And then she just sort of...
She calls it a costume.
It's a costume. This is the best costume of the day. And, you know, there is this sort of, like, goofy self-awareness where she knows, like, it's, you know, it's clear that she sees this, like, yeah, all right, this is a little, you know, silly and goofy, but this is just what I do. This is, I come up with stuff. I'm constantly just sort of thinking about this. Yeah.
It's her outlet. It's the only one that she has.
I wouldn't say she sees it as silly and goofy. I think she sees it as, like, outside and different.
Yeah, well, she has a line about, you know, like, this is the revolutionary outfit.
Exactly.
You know, that I can't wear this on the streets of East Hampton. You know, they're not ready for it, basically.
Yeah.
And, God,
and she's right. Stuck-up so wasps right. aren't ready for that.
No. This so nasty true. Republican town.
I love how much Little Edie hates Republicans and the Catholic Church.
Yes. Even though she converted to Catholicism to, like, gain some structure within her life, but also hates it. Yeah. She's full of contradictions. That's why I love her. She's always like, oh, if I just got a husband, everything would be fine. But then she's also like, I'm so glad that I didn't. Men are trash. There's nothing good about them.
She has so many great quotes and thoughts.
Yes.
Like, she's really just thinking a lot, like all the time. She's just thinking. And I like that. I really... And I like Big Edie because she really, like, I think she's very self-aware.
Yes.
Like, my life wouldn't be like this if my husband wasn't a piece of shit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But my life is this, and I'm going to keep living.
I mean, she was basically left to rot, and that's sort of what happened, you know?
I think the house is a perfect representation of what their... Men who are supposed to care for them in their lives. Uh-huh. That's what they did. They stopped pruning the garden. They stopped checking the roof and it fell apart. And then they blamed those women.
And the men include Big Edie's other two sons.
Yep.
Who seem to have a very hands-off approach to their mother and sister.
Mm-hmm.
But that's also because there's... I don't know if this is just... something that is exclusive to the South, but Little Edie never did her quote-unquote duties to have a family of her own and procreate and, you know, keep doing the thing. So because she never fulfilled her purpose was to take care of her mother because she did not have a family of her own. And I feel like that was... No one ever said it, but I feel like that was why people, like, left her.
Yeah, that's women's work.
Yeah.
Right. Well, Edie has a great line. Again, she's just full of little idiots.
So many.
But, you know, what is it? The hallmark of aristocracy is responsibility.
Mm.
Is that it? Is that it, Ma? Is that what I got to do? You know, and it's...
Yeah.
But as much
and
as
I
she
love that
hates
she thinks
it.
That that's the hallmark of aristocracy, then she was abandoned to uphold the hallmark of aristocracy by the aristocracy.
It's like, like a totally empty, it's an empty palace sort
They're like,
of.
Yeah, but you do it. I got shit to do in Mexico.
My piece of shit younger brothers, they're going to give us $150. What was it? $150 a month or something like that.
Yeah.
So real quick. So in the...
25 of that went to their black gardener.
true.
And as someone who works for like two older gay men, I was like, that's me.
How dare you, Trey?
So the narrative film, the 2009 Drew Barrymore, Jessica Lange movie.
Why the fuck does Drew Barrymore have hair in that movie?
She does and then she doesn't. That it's so it tries to like fill in the gaps of their history, and there's a lot of flashbacks and flash forwards. I mean, that's the whole movie is flashbacks and flash forwards. And I'm not gonna say that I liked it.
When did the movie come out?
2009.
That I have to look. Hold on, go keep talking.
I'm not gonna say that I liked it. It did well. It won like Emmys and shit.
It did.
But I didn't really care for it, but it tried to explain a lot of things, and it tried to explain sort of, I don't know, I don't think it was as hard on the Maisels brothers as it should have been.
No.
It suggested. It
certainly was not.
It hinted that they were maybe a little bit exploiting them, but really sort of.
It let them off the hook.
It let them off the hook, and it made the bad guy into Big Edie, really, in a lot of ways. I mean,
I would say Mr. Bill was the bad guy. Sure. But.
For little Edie, Big Edie was the big bad because she kept saying no. She kept holding her back.
I feel like this movie, with only knowing two facts, the dates of when little Edie died and the date when this movie came out, it just sure feels like more people taking advantage without having to give them any damn money because she died in 2002 and then the movie came out in 2004. It doesn't take 2 years to make a daytime movie.
Thought it was 2009. Well, you got to take time to option it. You know what I mean? A script has to be written. These things take time.
It doesn't take that much time.
So it's like that moment somebody's reading the morning of the obituary.
That's
like,
exactly.
All right, here we go.
That's definitely what it feels like because you know what you can pay a lot less money to? An estate.
Yeah.
And if there's nobody there, which there wasn't, I don't think you'd have to pay anything to anybody. Except for, the Maisel or the Shitty Brothers, were they dead by then?
The Maisels? Yeah. I don't know. They might still be around.
So they probably got money yet again off of these women.
Which I do not like.
Anyways, here's a quote from David real quick. He sounds like a real stand-up guy. When asked about if he thought he took advantage of two women who are vulnerable, I'm going to say this like a douche. As someone with the background in psychology, I knew better than to claim they were mentally ill. Their behavior was just their way of asserting themselves. And what could be a better way to assert themselves than a film about them asserting themselves? And here's the best part. They were always in control, were they?
That's like Britta from Community. So like, as a psych major.
Right? So you called and asked if you could play those private personal phone messages because they were, quote, always in control?
Oh, so
or are you a liar?
There's a 5-minute conversation that was recorded between Little Edie and I think Al. Albert Maisels. Mm-hmm. And I have it here if you want to hear it.
It makes me want to like fight them. I know that they're both dead, but just fight these men.
We can be on their graves.
All right, let's go. All right, well, go ahead, Josh. Play 5 minutes where I'm not going to let you play the whole thing. Play a few minutes of sadness.
Okay, hold on. I'm connecting right now.
Connecting to the fancy podcast machine.
Fancy podcast machine.
Fancy podcast machine.
All right, here we go.
It's okay. These two men are on microphones because I am chaperoning them.
Chaperoning us. We need it.
Keep us in line. All right, here we go.
After I got your letter, and I tried to find out, why they didn't ring this bell, my phone.
When I called, they didn't
know anything about it. So I called. I called AT&T. Also, yeah. I tell you the trouble with this phone. When it rings, I can't hear the ring, and so I can't answer it. That's the trouble. How are you?
I'm fine. I wonder how you are.
I'm okay.
Good. Everything okay?
Darling, could you send me something?
Sure. What is it?
Send me some large safety pins. I just have little ones. Could you send me large?
Sure.
Not too large, you know, but large.
You mean about an inch or an inch and a half, right? Something like that?
Yeah.
Yeah, about an inch or an inch and a half, something like that.
What?
Maybe an inch or an inch and a half long.
I can't hear you.
Yeah.
Isn't that awful?
Yeah. Listen. Yeah, go ahead.
How's your family? How is everything?
Everybody's fine.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, very fine.
You said you'd write me a letter. Thank you for your Christmas card.
Oh, yeah, sure. And thanks for all of your letters.
A beautiful card.
Yeah.
Listen, the election, the voting was so terrible down here. It ruined the Christmas. All the trouble about the election.
I know. And Edie, it's terrible. It's terrible.
Listen, Al.
Yeah.
Do you think that Al Gore is going to get in 4 years, or do you think it's all over?
No, I think he has a much better chance.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, after all, he really won this election.
She thought they were friends.
Yeah. Yeah. At the end of that conversation, right, she goes on this whole thing, but Al, we should have gotten married, Al. We should have gotten married.
Oh, no.
And, yeah. And it's...
Because that was the point in the movie where I was like, stop this.
Mm-hmm.
It was after the dance where she was like, oh, I've waited my entire life. And she was definitely... It felt like she was getting something from this... attention from having a spotlight, from having an outlet outside of her own mother, that I was like, oh, this is bad.
Yeah.
I started to feel like this, and it was bad.
She thought they were friends, mm-hmm. and I don't believe them at all when they made claims like, oh, well, we encouraged none of this. You're a liar.
Yes.
It is a classic documentary film trick, if you will, to get people to take out old photos because it gets people looking. It gives you something interesting to look at. It gets people talking. It loosens them up.
Yeah.
People like to show off their lives, and even the most mundane of like, oh, this is a cat I used to have.
Yeah.
They like to talk about. So he's a liar. Nobody's like, oh, I'm going to bust out all these family albums. He's a liar. They're both liars.
Yeah.
I don't believe them in any way. Like, oh, we did nothing. We did nothing to encourage this in any way. We were just there filming so professionally. You a liar. And it's so easy to control the narrative when you can literally control the narrative.
Yeah. The one thing I will say is, so in France, in the New Wave documentaries, they had this idea called cinema verite, right? Fly on the wall. In America, we called it direct cinema, but the same idea was in play, right? You would just sort of be there, you would observe, not so much talking heads, not so much other things coming into play, and you would just sort of document life as it was. In fact, I think it was the Maisels, or maybe it was somebody else who worked on the John F. Kennedy and Hubert Humphrey's primary race. It was called primary.
Mm.
It was a big deal in direct cinema because it was one of the first times that handheld cameras had been used, and it sort of paved the way for things like Salesman and other Maisels films. So,
who keeps giving these guys money?
But the point I want to make...
It's right up there with Ken Burns, who keeps giving that guy money.
But the point I want to make is that I feel sometimes that people can hide behind that sort of direct cinema verite, like, oh, no, whoa, I'm just a fly on the wall. I'm not doing anything. I'm not making any choices here. So anything that happens is out of my hands. But the thing is that...
You change the outcome by measuring it.
Exactly.
Say it again for the people in the back.
Because no matter what, no matter if you do something or set up a shot or do a reenactment or whatever, you're making a choice of where to be with that camera and where to point that camera and how far to zoom in and what to focus on. And all of those things are choices.
And as a documentary filmmaker, you know how to make those zooms and pans and sweeps and choices that elicit certain feelings.
And you know, and in the post production, you know how to edit things so that you can juxtapose certain imagery or certain lines or certain concepts with others to sort of make a point, which is what they do. I mean, they absolutely do that.
They absolutely do. And it's like another reason I know that they're liars about, oh, we did nothing. Like, well, you couldn't keep your opinions to yourselves. Because when Little Lady starts showing pictures of what she looked like as a young person and videos and stuff, they would not stop complimenting. Like, oh, you were so pretty. She's right there.
Yeah.
What is wrong with you?
Even though I'm...
There's like, oh, you look really good in this picture. Like, tell me more about this. Maybe if they were actual filmmakers instead of just fucking peeping Toms... Then maybe we could have had a different movie.
Because I'm gonna say this carefully, but at the time of the filming, Little Edie is like a stunning person.
Yes,
like her face outside of her fashion choices, like she is like very captivating as a as a
again person. This obsession with youth culture, like oh look how beautiful she was. She still is. She's just 52 now.
Yeah. She's got a beautiful...
So calm down.
Yeah. Her smile is great. Yeah. She's got this energy.
Yeah.
She's got great angles. She knows. She's got this fantastic presence.
Mm-hmm. She's got games. Those legs for days.
Yeah.
Like...
Those legs, they go all the way up.
And I mean, in so many ways, like, I don't want to use the trope of, like, Manic Pixie Dream Girl, but you know what I mean? Like... Reading the horoscopes about husbands and stuff like that, like it's in the stars with a magnifying glass and like looking at people through binoculars and stuff. That's
all
cool.
All I need is a Libra man.
That's right.
It's eccentric. It's
She's
original.
Charming,
I love
though.
It. I love it. I love everything about it.
She is educated in the way that makes her really fun at parties, but not in a way that makes you good at. Real things.
Exactly.
Going to parties is real. That's important.
It is. You're right, but...
She's like Parker Posey. She's a party girl.
Yeah, but if you were born an American princess,
yeah,
would you need to know how to manage a checkbook or a household?
No.
Or how to schmooze with the right people and know people?
Right.
That was never something she ever thought she would have to do in her life.
Right. Yeah. Well, it makes me wonder because in the narrative film from 2004, the Drew Barrymore one, you get this sense that Edie sort of...
Little Edie.
That Little Edie, post the documentary coming out, like sort of finds her audience or finds acceptance. Like she's... They have this very long scene where Drew Barrymore is recreating a performance that Little Edie did... Yeah. After the documentary came out.
She does her own cabaret.
She does her own cabaret. And it's like, it's a pretty, I think it's meant to be a sort of like her character's hitting a high note. And and this is like a really great thing. But I wonder if that was an actual reality or, you know, I mean.
That did happen.
Yeah, that did happen.
You know, how much liberty did they take with that?
Because she bounced around a little bit. After selling the house, she lived in New York for a while, went to Montreal, y'all. Just your game show host, Montreal. It's obviously getting too late.
Hey, yo, I got a real question.
What's that?
What is that?
Do you guys know anything about Iron Man?
Ooh!
Marvel Minute.
Welcome to this special segment, Marvel Minute. I inadvertently, not on purpose, did not watch any of the Marvel movies. So I've been chucking my way through them. And these two fellers here said, hey, Rachel, why you just skip it? Go straight to Iron Man, man. That's why you don't like these Marvel movies. It's because they're all old and outdated. You got to get to Iron Man. And then you'll be in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And you'll get it. You'll finally get it. Trust us. We know these things. And so I was like... I do trust you. I'm running towards Iron Man. Why isn't he catching me? Why is it so boring? Why isn't it stopping? He built a suit. I don't... It's so dumb. Why?
Robert Downey Jr., remember where there was only one set of footprints in the desert scene?
That's when you left me to die. Who's that lady? Is that the goop lady? Do I have to, like, enema my vagina now or whatever she sells?
It's a jade egg.
This is just an hour and a half military recruitment movie with bad jokes in it. You guys are liars. You're liars. When does it get good? Haven't they made like a bagillion Marvel? Isn't Robert Downey Jr. retired from Iron Man because they made so many and he's like, well, like, guys, I like being rich, but, like, enough's enough. Stop. No more money, okay? I'm going to go do something else now.
We can't tell you without spoiling the lore. Sorry.
It doesn't, does it? The way you said that, like, I can't spoil the lore. It's because it doesn't get good, and I want you to keep watching it.
No, I can't spoil the lore because it's unspoilable.
Like the like, is this, it's clearly, is it just movies for boys? Like preteens? Is that why I don't like it? Did I miss it?
Well, Iron Man came out in the wake of, so it came out, what, 2004 or 5 or something like that? It was sometime in the aughts.
It was definitely after 9/11.
But it was after 9/11.
Oh, 100%.
They had no problem making every enemy in that film brown and Middle Eastern.
They gave the, I'm surprised it
except
didn't,
for Jeff Bridges.
I'm surprised it didn't have the yellow hue. You know what I'm talking about? Uh-huh. When you accidentally find your white hero character in Mexico or the Middle East, suddenly everything's all yellow. Just like, I just crossed the border.
This summon is oppressive. Oh.
Yeah.
So
you thought it was great?
Yeah, 10 out of 10.
It's really when it kicks off. It's when MCU.
It kicks off. It kicks off.
What did you think about Terrence Howard's performance?
Oh, he was the military. No, he was.
You don't have to answer that.
He was a general that sure. That's like Tony Stark's bud. So yeah. He like does some favors.
His standard issue black best friend.
something.
We went to academy together.
No, guys, that's not the vibe I got from him. It was something. Hey, black kids, have you thought about joining the army?
Oh, there's Terrence Howard. He was in Hustle and Flow. Just saying.
You might like it. Hey, have you guys heard of this rapper? His name is, what was that?
Shaggy. Yeah. Shaggy, also a Marine.
Have you heard of Shaggy?
Also a Marine.
Also a former Marine.
Also a former Marine. So you can just sign up. You will also be
a rapper.
Shaggy level famous.
Disgusted.
Yeah, the Marines. Shagadelic.
It's the one ad we won't do. So if you are in the Marines, keep your money.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, I watched the whole thing, and I only fell asleep twice.
Only
twice.
Okay.
It was a lot of talking with another person. All right, I'm going back to my room, and I'm going to work on my robot. And, like, it was just, like, it was a lot of that. It was a great movie for... If you like long montages of like people working on cars and stuff from like Fast and Furious, you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
If you like those kind of shots.
Whoa, Josh, be careful. The Fast and the Furious is America's epic. Like other people might have the Iliad and the Odyssey.
Mm-hmm.
We have the Fast and the Furious redefining what family is every time.
Shit.
That bums me out.
I don't want to be an American no more.
You guys are no fun. I guess we're not family after all. Right, Vin Diesel? I will say the part with the robots who were the fire extinguishing robots.
Oh, yeah.
That made me get... I was like, oh, that's a giggle. Can we have a movie just with the robots, please?
That was cute.
So you say that. Keep watching.
Are there more fire extinguishing robots?
There are more robots.
They're like minions. They're so cute. No. I don't remember much about Iron Man 2 except the very beginning of it. It's like, it looks like it was...
Wait. We gotta...
Oh, yeah. Sorry.
I haven't seen it yet.
Well, all I was gonna say, I won't say any details beyond it looks like something that you would see on, like, Spike TV. You know what I mean?
Yes.
It's like, this intro brought to you by Spike TV. We're for dudes.
I just... Why can't they get it together? They should be able to make a movie that I like. I willingly read fan fiction, right? Mm-hmm. Like, surely, with millions of dollars, they can make one of them that I'll be like, you know what?
Well, you're only like 5 years away from Black Panther, so there you go.
All right, so next is the the Incredible Hulk.
Oh, no.
Wait, you've done a Hulk. Which one is this? Is this the first one with Ruffalo?
You guys said Iron Man is the start of the cinematic universe, right?
Right. So it's Ruffalo. It's Ruffalo's Incredible Hulk.
Edward Norton.
I'm not sure.
No.
Ruffalo doesn't have his own Hulk
movie.
Yeah, so it's incredible. So the 2008 is the beginning of the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
That was as late as 2008? I mean, it was 2000 and late.
Oh, my gosh. So it was Iron Man, The Incredible Hulk, and Punisher Warzone, which is, you know.
You're going to skip that one, right?
Yeah. Absolutely. The people who have those thin blue line Punisher stickers, it makes me question if you understand the movie you watched. Or I've not watched it yet. Is the movie such a staunch departure from the comics that Punisher is just like, hey, guys, cops are doing a great job. Let's give them a donut and a high five.
I'm just really into iconography. I like skulls. It's fucking badass.
Yeah.
So, what's Punisher?
Yeah, this is unrelated. I think they're doing a great job. And vigilante justice is bad. Okay, guys? Is that what the movie is? Because I don't think that those people are watching the movie right.
I'm sending this one out. But I look forward to your further analysis of this franchise.
They need to get it together or give me a call and we'll fix it together. Whichever is fine with me. My contact information.
Marvel Minute.
Way to finish it too early.
God damn it.
My contact information is CashGrabCinema@Instagram. We deleted our Twitter. For obvious reasons.
Fuck you, Elon.
Anyways, do yourself a favor and just watch the trailer. Now you can sing your song.
Do you see this?
Yeah, you see it?
We got a sign.
Josh, can you read the hashtag for me?
Yeah. So for all of you
who want to use our hashtag so we can find you easily.
Let's get this hashtag going. So it's hashtag DYAFJWTT. Do yourself a favor. Just watch the trailer.
That's Iron Man. Josh, do your song.
Do, 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 do.
I really, I hate to say this. Josh.
Yeah.
It's been a good however long we've been doing these podcasts
together. Oh, boy.
Shit.
But
I knew it was going to happen.
But you've been fired from your jingles job. Trey. You have to come up with a jingle next time.
I'm ready.
All right.
You won't last a week.
Back to this, for some reason, legendary film. Trey, thoughts, feelings?
So I did some, some research.
Just a little bit, a little here and there.
I'm not going to go into it the way that I normally do. Because I printed out the article.
You didn't get it cross-referenced?
But
oh my gosh.
I did not
cross-referenced.
Did you get it notarized?
I did.
Yes, because often people get their research papers notarized. What kind of joke is that? I'm so disappointed in you.
Did you get it bronzed?
That's the level of professionalism that I bring here to this space.
Professor Harris, I had my homework notarized. It costs $32? Is that going to get me an A?
You get a 3-point bump.
Yay!
So, previously, when I mentioned that there's a tradition in the South and maybe in other places where the if there is a family with many siblings and one of them does not have a family of their own, like a biological family that they have made their own, mm-hmm. then they are responsible for the parents.
I'm going to have to disagree with you a little bit.
That would be a really good excuse to have kids. Same.
It's the oldest daughter mm-hmm. every time. No matter yeah. how much responsibility also she true. Has.
Yeah.
The eldest daughter in the South. You'll take care of us, won't you? Ignore how bad we treated you. But I also...
We were young and foolish.
In my own life, that really reflects the truth. Because my own... Yeah. Yes.
But in the South, I would also argue that it is seen as the son's responsibility to not caretake, but to pay for stuff. Mm-hmm. And where was Big Edie's sons on that one? Paying for nothing.
Don't know.
And I'm not saying your parents are entitled to your money, but also, damn.
Well, in the dramatized film, which I say specifically because I'm not sure how much stock I put in that.
Yeah.
The fair. Two sons, once the came to their mother, once their father died, and it was like, hey, Dad didn't leave you anything. What you could do is sell this house and move into this other place that has a lot less overhead.
There would be no stairs to climb. It's on this warm Caribbean island or something like that.
Right. And Lil Edie was like, oh, let's do this. But Big Edie was like, I don't want to leave this place. I felt good here. I felt loved here. I felt adored here.
She loved that house.
Yeah.
Well, there's another detail in the film, too, which is that she has... It's alluded that
she left with nothing, but it was very little.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's alluded to that she was having an affair with her pianist, with her accompanist.
It's no.
No? You didn't get that feeling?
No, he was real gay. Josh, come on.
Was he?
Josh... Are you serious?
I thought that they were together.
Did you really not get that?
Trey, no.
Trey, do you want me to tell you about the time we went to the gay club in Hawaii?
Yes.
Okay, so we're at the club.
You've told this story on the podcast before.
It bears repeating.
It bears repeating. We've been doing the pod for like 2 or 3 years. We've got new friends. We've got new listeners.
Doing it for like 5 years.
Josh, story time.
I'm sorry.
So we're at the gay club. And it was a kind of striptease night.
Ooh, with the Go-Go Boys?
Mm-hmm.
Can I do background music?
yeah. Well, actually, we were outside.
Oh.
So the show was over, and we had walked outside. And I was already like, woo. Mm-hmm. And Anthony is always the most responsible.
Yes.
Even if he's like, even if he's gone, he's still very with it. Except for the 2 times I lost him downtown, but that's a different story.
Shout out to you, Anthony.
But I found him later, so it doesn't count. but we're outside schmoozing with people that we were meeting. And of course, I don't understand why it is this way, but gay clubs for some reason always just mean dudes. So it's just me and a bunch of dudes. Like, where are the ladies? Come on, ladies.
Yeah.
I cannot stress to you enough how phenomenally attractive this man was.
Oh.
Like, stepped out of a model shoot attractive. He was wildly attractive, and he was Australian.
Australian.
And he had a very nice accent. Like, mm-hmm. like Chris Hemsworth, but slightly thinner with brown hair.
I like wow. Chris Hemsworth.
Wow.
We're not friends. I don't think he cares if I mispronounce his last name.
I don't think so, no.
Thor. but he comes up, and he is not just, like, casually chatting with Josh, because that's what Josh thought was happening. Like, oh, casually chatting, two friends. Hello, adult bud. And this guy was like, do you want to come? Essentially, like, I want you to come home with me.
Wow.
Yes. He was flirting so hard. No subtlety.
Yeah.
No subtlety.
To be clear, that wow was not a surprise. It was just like, I'm wow that you didn't pick up on that.
It was so obvious that he was even like doing the subtle touches when you're flirting with somebody you really like.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
And Josh was just like, what a friendly guy that was.
That guy was all right. You know, he's from fucking Australia. No, that's just crazy. Anyway.
That's so cool. And we left because Josh was like, well, Anthony said he wanted to go to this other club. Bye. And that guy, you could tell, he was just like.
I'm so heartbroken.
I put myself out there and he scorned me.
This is back when you looked like Taylor Lautner, right?
Yeah, yeah. This is back. Mm-hmm. Exactly. So it's not that surprising that he was hitting on me because I look like Taylor Lautner.
Yeah. So that is why Josh missed the obvious cues that the piano guy was gay, because he's just like, that guy's so friendly.
Everybody was so friendly to me back then when I look like Taylor Lautner.
But the dad, whatever like patriarch there was, called that guy a Ganymede. Which is like a real, real, real old-fashioned term for a homosexual.
Oh, I've never heard that.
I hadn't either. No, I had. I was like, wait, I know what that means. But I also kind of knew the context already because I was like, oh, I know what you're
doing. Hold on, let me check my notes and slurs.
It's like, I think it's biblical. So it's like way, way, way back. But yeah, the guy was her... I believe rich people would call that her pet gay.
Oh.
Well, I read somewhere else that there was speculation that she was having an affair with somebody who was living in their kitchen for a while, and he died in the house.
Oh, cool.
Hmm.
Yeah. But they did end up selling the house. So Big Edie, I think she didn't leave because it's clear she knew. Mm-hmm. This is it for me.
Yeah.
And I want to die where I'm most happiest. Or where, at least where I was most happiest.
Yeah.
And for a lot of very old people, moving alone can kill them.
Yeah.
So maybe.
That's so stressful.
I think she probably made the right choice for her.
I agree.
And she asked Little Edie, please don't sell the house to someone who will tear it down.
Yeah.
And so she didn't. And she lived in that house, even though she fucking hated it, for 2 more years.
Yep.
Until some dude who used to or was currently working for the Washington Post, and he came in to buy it for $220,000, and he even told her that she couldn't take any of the furniture. So he was like, it can either be broom swept perfect, or you can leave all the furniture. And when we got there to look at the house, she was on the porch and welcomed us like it was a castle. I love in this interview that he is laughing at her yet again. Is it so laughable? He creepily recreated their house exactly how it was before. He even took the destroyed drapery to a business that recreated the fabric perfectly. So is their life laughable, or do you want it? Because it can't be both. Oh, and his wife told everybody it was fucking haunted by them. They didn't even die there.
Yeah, but I mean, yeah, you're gonna work in ghosts though. If you got a big giant mansion, you know, you're gonna work in ghosts. It's New England.
Especially with that accent.
Yeah.
Even in death, you can't leave these women alone.
Some say Big Edie still sings T for Two.
She up says in that. The attic. She says that. Really? That Big Edie sings around the house.
Oh, my God.
She died in a hospital.
I hate that.
Like,
that sucks.
It's right up there when people, and I know that people say this.
I think Zach Baggins has been up there to check that out. All right, guys, tonight we're going to do the scariest thing we've ever done in the history of anything. Going to Grey Gardens.
There's some warm liquid running down my leg. But it bothered. It's right up there with the same kind of thing when people, and I know that people say it for lots of different reasons, but it bothers me most of the time when people say rest in power. Like, leave people alone.
Yeah.
Give them peace.
Let them rest.
Rest in peace.
That's it.
They can be quiet and still and gone now. You don't have a magic fucking ghost friend.
No.
In your weird house that you made. Like, it's weird. Like, oh, what a bunch of losers. Anyways, here's where I recreated your house perfectly. They have a poster of the Drew Barrymore movie up in their house. But not the poster of the original with
the actual lady. People.
Like, oh my God.
It's weird. It's weird.
How would the Drew Barrymore one even have a poster? Wasn't it like it was a made for TV movie? It was like a.
They had it screen printed while going, they're so dumb. Anyways, is my $5,000 custom made poster done yet? I'm gonna put it up here where I think the ghost is.
Best money I ever spent on Etsy.
And it sold. Oh, I forget exactly when, but for $10 or $16 million.
Wow.
Yeah.
Damn. Honestly, Little Edie could have had that much money.
I wish.
Well, she did. Like, didn't she? Didn't she get that money?
She got $220,000.
What the fuck?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's now, there was a number of years in between. Yeah.
Now, look, I'm sorry. That's a lot of money. I'm not even going to, like, scoff at that.
Yeah.
But by comparison, wow. Right.
Yeah.
Wow, wow, wow. Yes. Wow, wow.
But, like, yeah. Just another huge paycheck off the back of these women while he's laughing at them and mocking them while holding their ghost hostage. I mean, what a weird thing.
So I have to ask, do you feel like there is a way that people can see this movie and, I'll say with Little Edie specifically, like, appreciate her and, like, her contributions and her creativity and her turns of phrase and all of that, and it not be exploitative given how the film was released?
Well, I stand by what I said earlier, is definitely read about it first. Mm-hmm. Don't go into it blind. Okay. It's so easy to mock things you don't understand.
So true.
Right.
And don't pay for it.
That's good advice. Don't pay for it. But
I like that. Yeah.
But I would say yes, absolutely. I think that there is, like, this very narrow window between getting on the bandwagon of exploitation and actually. Little Edie especially, Big Edie too in a way, but Little Edie, she really shines through as just this amazing human being whose stories and thoughts and philosophies could have been lost forever.
Yeah.
But they weren't.
They weren't saved how they should have been.
Exactly. Like, the conditions by which they were saved, that's a problem. Yeah. But I'm glad that some part of her was saved and preserved and shared with the world, because she's amazing.
I would love to see, and it's probably gone because film is finite. It deteriorates, and I'm sure they didn't save it. But if it could be re-edited with narration put in, with the backstory, so you could understand.
Yeah.
I would like to see that. But, film is very delicate. I'm sure it's long since.
Who would you pick to narrate? Who could narrate that? And
French Drescher?
Oh my God, yes. Oh my God.
Yeah.
Hopefully there would be no funny parts, though, because you get her laughing and
wait, you guys are ridiculous. Go get the ghost that one fucking.
Oh my God.
I just remembered she also wrote a book called The Ghost of Grey Gardens. Like,
I hate that.
They're obsessed.
The two of you know a bit more about documentary filmmaking than I do, and you've kind of mulled over these sorts of questions of morality and that maybe I haven't considered as fully.
Mm-hmm.
So, like you were saying, if we're blue skying this, what else should have been done to make this a more equitable arrangement for everyone involved? Well, not for everyone involved, for these subjects. That's that's what I mean. Fuck the Maisels, if I'm being quite honest. But
yeah,
the narration, you said.
Yeah, I need to know their background. They should have been asked.
Mm.
Nobody asked them. And it was just the same thing over and over again, where men knew what was best for them or didn't care to help them. So just ask them.
According to the narrative film, there was a sort of meeting. But in that scene, and this is really the most that you hear from the Maisels, as far as I can tell, it's the most that you really hear from them all in one scene. But they don't tell the full truth about what it is they're going to do or how much they're going to be paid. You know what I mean? There is this question about money. And David Maisels is like, well, money and documentary, those words don't usually go together. It's not something that makes a lot of money. But, of course, little Edie is shown to say, like, well, that's fine. Whatever money we get is great. But, you know, like, this will be great for my career. And, you know, this will get me seen in the world.
Again, it's so easy to lie about people who are dead when one of the Maisel brothers was still alive when that movie was made. So he could just lie about whatever he wanted. But that meeting, that did happen with their family lawyer.
Oh. They weren't even present to discuss how they were going to be filmed.
But their family lawyer got to decide how much money they were going to make off of this.
Damn.
In my opinion, the best way to pay a documentary subject is with royalties.
Yes.
It's the money after the fact. Because if I don't make money, you don't make money. So if you're not doing... If you do it knowing that neither of us might not make any money, because it's very easy to make no fucking money making a documentary, then I think that's the most ethical way to still see the true subject as best you can.
Yeah, because if you give somebody like 20 grand up front or something,
you
like
that. You don't know what they're going to do to earn that 20 grand.
Right.
But if later it's, here's what we got together. Right. And it might only be like $1,000.
Still.
But it's an honest representation of who you are, at least. But I think with the Edies, what happened in their pay was very unethical.
Okay.
And if it was like, oh, well, if they knew, and maybe that was a true thing from the Maisel brothers, like, oh, she said it, this will help my career. That's wildly unethical.
Yeah.
Like, oh, this movie might make me famous. Why did they not correct her? They let her believe that, which is a lie.
True tea.
But he didn't. One of them didn't die until 2015. So it's real easy to control the story when you're the only one left. Like, oh, yeah, she definitely said that. Wink.
I can't wait till I'm the only one left of Cash Grab Cinema. And I can be like,
I'm sorry. Did you just threaten me? Do you have any idea how much peanut butter Josh eats? There's no way he's outliving us.
So loud every time you move. You think you're gonna outlast the two of us?
I'm older.
Live in that delusion. It's fine.
Yeah, aren't you turning 40 this year?
It's so funny.
Josh,
stupid joke.
How much wine do you drink a day, Josh?
Very little. Almost all the water he drinks is filtered through coffee. Like, oh, it's water.
No.
That cup right there is filled with coffee.
And my machine's not doing so great. It keeps putting grounds in it.
Do you see this jar? This is my second one today.
Exactly.
Full of water.
We will live forever.
I was gonna rewrite our history, but this is so much better.
Also, that complexion is looking real dewy, Rachel.
Thank you. Thank you. Because you know what I do? Put lotion on my face. You know what Josh does? Washes his face with bar soap.
What do you put on afterwards?
Nothing.
Oh.
Okay. Whoa, hold on. Hold on a second. I put I put hair conditioner in my beard.
I bought him beard conditioner.
To soften it up.
But he uses regular conditioner.
It probably gets some of it gets down to my face.
Use bar soap on your beard, too.
Yeah.
How dare you?
I'm sorry.
There's face wash in the shower. I am also lazy. I'm not going to wash my face in cold water. That's cold. Gross. I'll fix that with extra lotion after.
Well, thank you both for reminding me how close to the end I am.
Just use a washcloth. Damn.
So you were saying about outliving the both of us? What was that about?
Anyway,
I've forgotten completely.
Listen, we've come to the part of the episode where I'm going to ask the youthful Trey and the ever decrepit Josh. Is this movie a cash grab? You already know my answer. I think 100% hell yeah. Those Maple Brothers are like, fuck these ladies, let's get paid. But what do you guys think? Is this a cash grab or is this worthy of saving in the Library of Congress, which has been done?
Okay, I'm gonna have a hybrid response to that. I would say that yes, absolutely.
I'm sorry, you're gonna have a hybrid?
I give this film the highest of breads, sourdough. So I would say initial motivations of the Maisel brothers, mm-hmm. absolutely cash grab territory, 100%. They said, oh, look at these grotesque freaks. We're going to exploit that.
A Kennedy, you say.
And, yeah, yeah. Related to the Kennedys. Hot crackers. This'll sell in Poughkeepsie. And they decided to make this movie. But do I think that this movie deserves to be preserved in the Library of Congress? Yeah, absolutely, 100%. And for the reasons of it is a great document to preserve some piece of little Edie Beale, who is amazing. She's a great woman. So I'm happy it exists. I'm sad that why it exists.
I think if I had to say I'm happy it exists, would be solely for to teach younger people or anyone who thinks that they want to make documentaries so they can watch this and go, but not that.
Mm. True. Mm. I would want to preserve this in the same way that I would want... oh, jeez, what is the name of that movie?
That's Titanic.
Future generations have to see this. They're going to want to see Kate Winslet's
boobs. Is
that
James Cameron?
No, it's like the one where all the people are in blackface and they're like, black men are going to take in white women. Like,
oh, Birth of a Nation.
That one, yes.
Yeah.
That I feel like it should be preserved in the same way that one should, as like, this is a historical monument. We're going to put the proper context around it. We should not forget this, but it needs to be remembered as a way to...
As a movie that the president showed at the White House.
Yeah, that's true.
Which yes. one?
Birth of a Nation.
No, which president?
Woodrow Wilson.
Yeah.
Because he was racist as shit.
Yeah, it's not a surprise.
I mean, unlike all the other presidents.
He invited... Confederate veterans as well. Like,
fun.
Like lauded them.
That's so fun. Lauded oh my
them,
God.
Lauded them for their heroism.
I love that so much. Oh, wow. I will echo both of your sentiments and say that this is a very unique work of art that was made completely unethically. You know, I feel like this came out around the time that the Milgram experiment was happening, where they put the, wait, was the Milgram experiment? Whichever one where the psychology experiment where they had some people pretend that they were prisoners and some
the
people...
Stanford experiment.
Oh, yeah,
Stanford. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Oh, Milgram was the one where people were being... they thought that people were being electrocuted. But the Stanford experiment is the one I'm talking about. Ethics in psychological research, and I also guess documentation had not been settled yet.
No. Far from it. I don't think it is settled still.
I would agree with that.
True. I am upset with this film as much as I really was moved by it. I cannot say that my experience with it is worth what it took from the people who were the subjects of it. And I'm going to go a step further and say that I am more upset at the film adaptation by HBO Max, because although it did fill in a lot of gaps of information, it tied everything into a very neat narrative bow that I don't feel like actually happened.
All right, listen. This is a pitch.
Do
now,
it.
Now that the Mabel brothers are dead.
I love that you're misnaming them. That's so great.
Hey, Josh, I want you to know, I want to give them as little respect as fucking possible.
Anyway, these marbles over here, the Marble brothers, what they got going?
Listen, these marinara brothers.
Right? Spicy.
Now that they're dead and can't defend themselves, let's make a documentary about their Russian nesting doll of documentaries.
Yes.
And we can just say whatever we want about these Margarine brothers. And so, finally, give the ghost of the Edies a resting place and go find that freaking weirdo who said that Grey Gardens is possessed or haunted by them. It'd be like, say into the microphone you were lying and we'll let your Pomeranian out.
We'll say it.
We'll have the Maisels brothers portrayed by Will Ferrell and John C. Reilly.
Actually, yes. I want it to be a different person. They'll shit
themselves constantly.
I want it to be a different two people every time they have it. Every time I mispronounce their names in the narration. So John C. Reilly and who else did you say?
Will Ferrell.
Yeah, I want Key and Peele is one of them.
Yeah.
Two guys I find at a gas station.
Tommy Wiseau, Greg Sestero. Yeah, let's bring them in.
You and Josh, obviously.
Yes. Tia and Tamara.
I call Al.
Steve Harvey for both brothers.
Put a mirror in, do some trick photography.
Oh, no, it'll be really bad. It'll just be him and I just want him running back and forth between, I'm not even going to re-block the shot. I'm just going to have two cameras, and he'll just run back and forth.
It'll never cut. It'll just be so Al, what do you think we should do with the shot? And you hear him running behind the camera and trying to, change his jacket really quickly.
And it gets madder and madder as it goes. And I want him to quit halfway through the shot. Two dogs.
Yes.
Two plants.
Yes.
Yeah. A fish and a plant. A different plant from the last plant. Because
Zeus and Roxanne.
Yes. But the actual Zeus and Roxanne. Yes. So it's a dog skeleton and a dolphin skeleton. And then I just want to intercut those shots with Trey crying about the dolphin skeleton there because his feelings are really hurt.
I would. That would destroy me.
That's something nobody should have to see, a dolphin skeleton.
Yeah.
But honestly, after this conversation, I've come to see more that the movie that
two HBO... guys that can't speak Spanish but all the lines are in Spanish.
See.
And then they're just moving their mouths while two people who do speak Spanish say the lines, but they're two women instead of two men.
No quiero amor. El cine.
Anyways,
bueno.
download Duolingo now.
But I see, after this conversation, I see now that the movie that was made that I watched filled in a lot of gaps, but it also made, it was designed specifically to make people who like this movie
and were
very unsure about the ethics of it, feel good about being able to like it.
Yeah. Feel better about watching Grey Gardens.
Which is easy to do, again, when the only one left is, one of the Muppet Brothers.
And it gives both Little Edie and Big Edie a lot of agency that I don't know if they had, and the people who made the movies weren't really interested in that either. Yeah. They were interested in tying up this arc for them to make a movie. And a movie has to kind of end very cleanly in a way that a documentary does not.
I don't know. Like, what's that movie where they fall asleep but they're not asleep?
Inception?
Yeah. It doesn't have to. Apparently, it can end in a way that makes people go, fuck this movie.
Oh my gosh. Sheree, if you're listening, Rachel has never been on your side more.
Come on the pod. I love making fun of things.
So yeah, cash grab, and then also another cash grab on top of it by making a movie that makes you feel okay about the exploitation of these people, which is fucked.
All right, you heard it here first. It's another unanimous 3x cash grab. Should you watch the movie? Carefully.
Freely. Watch it free. I'm pretty sure you can watch it free on YouTube, and if not, there's other sites out there. Come on, guys.
Allegedly.
Yes. Yeah.
So thanks for listening. You can always catch us when we come back and we feel like it. If you want to help us come back more often, then feel free to help support the pod. Follow us on Cash Grab Cinema. Throw some coin in our hat. We're on Venmo and Cash App at Cash Grab Cinema. I've been Rachel, my lovely co-host Trey.
Hey.
And I'm Josh. And
Nebuchadnezzar. Josh.